afternoon. Welcome to Stand to Reason. And if you haven't noticed already, I'm not Greg Kokel. It doesn't take much to realize that. My name's John Noyes, and I'm honored to be filling in for my good friend, mentor, and now, dare I say, colleague, as I'm about to transition, hopefully, eventually, full-time with Stand to Reason as a speaker and outreach coordinator. And oh gosh, it wasn't that long ago that I remember listening to this program, driving in my car, and allowing Greg to put some stones in my atheistic shoes, because I wasn't always a believer. About 15 years ago, I was an atheist, and I used to listen to this program, and I remember hearing this voice on the other line and being challenged by what he was saying. And as I started to try to push in with my atheism into what Greg was saying, I started falling short and having, as Greg would say, I bumped into reality. And some of those bumps really hurt. And it's kind of surreal sitting here looking through the glass. I see Amy Hall, who's just amazing and wonderful. And meeting her for the first time was amazing. And I'm kind of in dreamland right now. But today, I'd really love to, everybody in the outside of the glass is concerned. I'm not mentioning them by name. I'm going to be digging into a topic that I've been putting a lot of thought into for the first probably about 20, 30 minutes. And then I'd really love to get to your questions. I already see that the lines are filling up, so I promise I will get to you guys. But I'd really love to discuss something that's on my mind. Now, the lines aren't totally full, so if you'd like to call us, please do. You can reach us locally at 855-243-9975 from 4 to 6 p.m. Every single Tuesday. We're here. Normally, it's Greg's voice, and he's probably a lot more comforting than me, but we'll do the best that we can today. And hey, if you're international, don't worry. We got a number for you, too. I think the country code's 1, I think. It sounds good. And if not, Google it. It's 1-562-424-8229. And if you send your questions through the website, we also we can answer them that way. And then you don't have to wait for us to get back to you. You don't have to wait on hold, but we will get back to you. So make sure you do that. And the topic that I'd really love to address with you is something that's been in the news actually a lot as of late. I'd like to talk to you guys about suicide. I know it's kind of a downer topic to bring up, but I think it's a really important topic. And some one I wish that the church would run into a little bit more as far as its activity in addressing the concerns, especially considering recent events. Here in Southern California, a pastor at Harvest Christian Fellowship in Riverside, Jared Wilson, last week decided to take his own life. And it's a really sad thing. I think it's kind of shaken the faith community as a pastor, as a Christian apologist, just as a fellow human being. My heart really breaks for him. He leaves a beautiful wife and two little children. And I think that we need to be addressing this issue. And I think there's apologetics that can weigh in. And, you know, oftentimes I think it's kind of swept under the rug, actually. When we talk about suicide, nobody wants to talk about it. It's kind of like abortion and euthanasia in that way. Not only are they similar in the fact that it results in the taking of a life, the ending of a life, but up until fairly recently, I think those topics, suicide and euthanasia, have kind of been off limits to the church. And we'll get into that. But up front, I want to be very clear about something. I want to be very, very clear that I don't come to this conversation today as a trained apologist. I'm not a theologian or even as a pastor or an expert really in anything. I come today to this topic as simply a human being who's been affected by suicide, as I would assume most of our listeners in some way, shape, or form have been affected by this. In 2011, my cousin Derek decided to take his own life. He shot himself with his family in the room right next door. And I remember receiving that phone call. It was like a Saturday morning, and I remember my sister on the other line let me know the news and how sad that is and how precious life is. And actually, suicide's something that even just ran into me in ministry all the time. Actually, my first phone call, emergency phone call as a pastor, I was fresh as a pastor 6 or 7 years ago, was a mom and a dad who were calling for advice as their son locked himself in his bedroom and was threatening to take his own life. I remember sitting on the phone for hours in my backyard, pacing back and forth, praying with the family, trying to lend whatever advice I could lend to them. And eventually, actually, I ended up making friends with this young man, and he's gone on to help others actually with addiction issues, which is fantastic. There's a win, but oftentimes it doesn't end that way. Like just recently, again, this last June, a friend of mine from years ago, he's one of the young men I lived with when I first moved to California, decided to end his life, and he leaves behind a beautiful wife and a little boy. You see, I really do think that this issue touches us all. It has me and it has you. And I want to just first say that if you're struggling with these things on the onset of this conversation, please tell somebody. Don't wait to tell somebody. You can email me at john@str.org if you need help, if you want to be pointed in the right direction. There's help available for you, and we want to make sure that you get that help. Don't keep these feelings. Don't keep what you're thinking inside. Tell a pastor. Tell a friend. Tell your brother. Tell your sister. Share this, because I think it's important. And you're not alone, and there's a lot of people who know what you're going through. And it doesn't seem like actually this problem is getting any better. And really, before I get too far into what I'm talking about, I'd love to offer you guys a definition of suicide, because I think it's important that when we talk about important things, we should define our terms a little bit. And I'd like to quote a great book. Karen Mason in Preventing Suicide says, in order to determine that a suicide has occurred, there has to be a couple things. There has to be three things. First, the event has to involve a self-inflicted act. Second, it has to result in a death. And third, it has to include intent. And intent is really important, because intent to die distinguishes it from an accidental death, which I think is kind of commonsensical. But just that, I think it's important for us to understand at the onset of this conversation to understand that suicide is death caused by self-inflicted injuries with some intent to die. And it's a problem, and it's a growing problem. Like I said, according to the CDC, suicide rates have climbed more than 30% in the last 20 years. But first, let's look at a few more statistics before we dive too far into the why question. More than twice as many people commit suicide than are murdered every year in this country. I didn't know that, and I struggled with that, because oftentimes we you know, especially in the realm of gun violence, and we're talking about this stuff all the time now, but twice as many people end their own lives than people who are murdered. Actually, suicide is the second leading cause of death among 10 to 34 year olds, and it's the fourth leading cause of death from 35 to 54 year olds. I learned all this stuff as I was reading some books and some news articles and some journal articles. I actually learned that 12% of American college students, 12% of American college students seriously consider suicide every single year. Not only that, but a majority of that 12% actually make a plan. They plan it out. They map it out. How am I going to do it? When am I going to do it? Where am I going to do it? With what am I going to do it? And not only these things, but suicide's often considered contagious. And what we find is with suicides, they happen in groups. I've experienced this. I live in Newbury Park, California, and sometimes we minister at the high school, and every once in a while there's a suicide, and sometimes they happen in groups, because what happens is one person chooses to commit suicide, and then people around them, maybe if it's teenagers, they start to think perhaps that this is an option for them as well. Friends, suicide is a major issue in our culture. It's just not talked about. It's just kind of swept under the rug. And as I said before, it's very similar to abortion and euthanasia. And euthanasia, and we're not going to touch on it, but it's a form of suicide. You know, for the longest time, these two issues, they just haven't been discussed, especially in the church. And I think it's the church that can weigh in on these things, because look what's happened with the abortion issue. Look what's happened with the euthanasia issue. As the church has brought the culture, the conversation to the culture, I feel like the tides have kind of swung a little bit. I think we see we're moving in on those issues, and we're arguing and defending life, and we're seeing wins, you know. And what happens is ultimately when these conversations are brought out into the larger culture, the cultural tide begins to shift. And the same thing, I think, can happen for this difficult issue, too. And in the process, I'm convinced lives can be saved. And that's why I want to talk about this ultimately. It's not just for my own benefit. It's not just a seems matter or even just push into a social issue. It's because I think that these people are they're valuable. And if we can save just one life, it's totally worth it. Same thing with abortion. You know, this like I said, this might be you. This might be you listening right now. And we need to let these kind of issues break our hearts and move towards them with the truth of who we are according to our story, allowing compassion and love for other people to lead the way. It's here in issues like suicide where actually I think our apologetic becomes weighty. And I'm going to explain that. What I mean when I say that our apologetic becomes weighty, I mean that that our faith, our belief is grounded in our proven knowledge of the Christian worldview. I don't believe in Christianity because it makes me feel good. It hasn't magically made everything in my life better. I don't know about you guys. I believe in Christianity, though, because it lines up with reality. The way I explain it to my girls, I've got four beautiful daughters at home, is I say that it best explains the way things really are. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably heard Greg explain reality like that before. So you shouldn't be a stranger to it. And when we apply the knowledge that we gain through theology, when we apply the knowledge that we gain through apologetics, and when we do so to every single area of life, we're able to offer robust, meaningful, and true answers to the questions raised by those very difficult issues. Again, those issues that are oftentimes a matter of life and death. And specifically right now, I'm thinking of issues having to do with the resurrection of Jesus, for example. The historicity of the resurrection of Jesus. I know Jesus was raised from the dead, and because I know Jesus was raised from the dead, whether it be the minimal facts approach, or whether it be historical reliability of the Gospels, whether it be proven prophecy, I know Jesus has been raised. And if Jesus has been raised, that means he is who he claimed to be. And that means I can believe the other stuff in the book, if you know what I mean. You know, I think these things are important. I'm also thinking about maybe the existence of an objective moral realm, you know, a deep moral reality, the way things ought to be. So you see, we apply our apologetics. We can prove that God exists through the existence of objective moral values. But why is that important? Well, I think that if we sit back and quiet ourselves a little bit, we can see that these things actually, they can weigh in on every issue of our life. See, we know that there's a deep moral realm. We know there's a moral realism to life, a way things ought to be. So that means we can weigh in on these important topics that may not necessarily have to do with the argument, but have to do with something extremely important. Specifically right now, I'm thinking of suicide, obviously. You know, I think it's out of the idea that we can demonstrate that the Christian story is the true story of reality, that we can move towards these existential problems of the day. And in the process, what we end up doing is we give robust answers to the question of that people are asking. And for our conversation this afternoon, the first question that I really want to weigh into, we'll see how many of these questions we can get through. The first question is, why do people commit suicide? Because in my research, in my reading, this is the question that everybody seems to be asking, but nobody knows for sure. As I said before, I've read a number of books and some journals on suicide in recent months, and all of them, almost to a T, say the same thing. No one really knows why someone takes their own life. In the beginning of her book, Night Falls Fast, Kay Redfield Jamison. Now, she's professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins. If you look up her book, she is an expert in the field. And a prolific author. Not only is she a prolific author, a professor, but she knows what she's talking about. She's struggled with mental health issues her entire life. She's tried to commit suicide. And she writes this right at the very onset of her book. We aren't certain as to why people kill themselves. Psychological states, complex motives, and subtle biological differences are difficult enough to ascertain in the living. Determining their existence or the role they may play in those who die by suicide is something else again. You know, there's a lot of I don't knows that go into this type of science when we're studying suicide. you know, Dr. Jameson goes on to wrestle with this question throughout the rest of her book, never really giving a concrete answer. And that's the trend I saw throughout most of the literature I found. And I think it's for reasons that have to do with her worldview, which we'll talk about in just a minute. She most often points to issues of mental health, as do many others that I've read. And I think even now, if you're listening right now, you're probably under the impression, and so was I, that, oh, well, mental health plays a big part in that. But still, there's something missing in their answers. And actually, the professionals, they admit it. They admit it, because when we look at the data, as I've been doing, when we look at the data, we start to understand why there's something missing, or they think there's something missing. It's because 54% of those who choose to take their own life don't actually have a known mental issue. There's no diagnoses there. So what's going on? We need to be asking ourselves this. And this is where, like I said, our apologetic and our knowledge of Christ and that we know the Christian worldview can weigh in on this. Now, we can speculate, right? But unless there's a note or some other means of communication left by the deceased, it's all we can do. All we can do is speculate. And even then, historically, I've found that suicide notes, they don't always speak to, you know, why the person has committed suicide. Sometimes they give instruction for the family. Sometimes not. Sometimes they give reasons, or sometimes they just vent. And sometimes those reasons aren't reliable. You know, some of the reasons could be that there's a closing of a in of circumstances. You know, life gets hard and they just can't take it anymore. That's I think the general perception. Sometimes those circumstances are financial. Sometimes it's relational. You know, every relationship is broken by sin or death ultimately. And sometimes it's coupled with substance abuse and other factors as well. But again, these things alone don't offer the answers so many of us are looking for, even when combined with mental illness. It's because the answers aren't found there. And as we roll into our first break, I'm going to come back and really talk about some of the solutions. What we're going to do is we're going to look at the reason why from a naturalistic perspective, and then we're going to look at a reason why from the Christian worldview and see how that works, guys. So I look forward to being with you right after this break.
We are at war. It's not a war of bombs and bayonets. It's not a war against flesh and blood. In fact, it's not a physical war at all. It's a spiritual war. That's why Paul instructs us to put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. The devil's primary scheme is deception. He wants us to believe false ideas about God. And the only way to guard against false ideas is to fill our minds with true ideas. Simply put, we combat deception with truth. It's unfathomable to imagine sending young men and women off to fight a physical war without proper training. Yet, when it comes to spiritual warfare, we do this all the time. The vast majority of our students are simply not prepared for the spiritual battle that awaits them. At this year's Rethink Apologetic Student Conferences, we're training students to counter the lies of the enemy. Lies like God does not exist, God is anti-gay, Muslims and Christians worship the same God are just a few of the false ideas we'll be addressing. So join me and a number of other speakers at one of this year's Rethink Apologetic Student Conferences. Find out more information about Rethink by going to rethinkapologetics.com. That's rethinkapologetics.com.
Atheists have long derided Christians for believing in miracles. But atheists need to look no further than their own worldview, materialism, to find miracle claims. In the latest episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud with Alan Schliemann, I explain how the atheist materialistic worldview makes several miracle claims to explain reality. Look for my podcast on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Welcome back, guys. This is John Noyes. I'm on Stand to Reason. I can't believe it. I'm so excited and nervous. I think I'm probably like 50% excited, I'm probably like 80% nervous and 20% excited. But either way, I'm honored to be here with you. And I'm filling in for Greg. If you're joining us, I'm one of the new members of Stand to Reason. I'm a speaker, but also their outreach coordinator. And I'm looking forward to having a good time with you guys. And before I get back into the talk, we're talking about suicide. I'd really like to let you guys know, you heard the ad about Rethink Apologetics Student Conference, which is coming up, and it's sold out. Like, it sold out, like, what, 2 weeks ago? Which is insane. I mean, I think it sells out every year. Last year, it sold out early. But there's still overflow. Is there still overflow? Yeah, there's still overflow. So don't be discouraged. You can join the party, and you can come and have a good time with us, and you can meet the speakers, and you can and sit in on the presentations. So it's there's overflow seating. Up to 2,700 students are going to be there. But make sure you sign up today, because you don't want to miss out. And that's if you're in Southern California. Now, if you're in Minnesota and you're listening to us, early bird registration is at, get this, 1,386 people. That's a lot of people. That's early bird registration. We're still a couple months out from the actual event. So if you're planning on trying to get out to Minnesota for the Rethink Student Conference, Rethink Apologetics Student Conference, make sure you sign up online. And one other note is before the break, and at the onset of this conversation, I gave you guys my email address, and it's john@str.org. And I want to make sure that you guys know it's J-O-N. It's Jonathan. It's short for Jonathan. So JON@str.org. And I'd love to hear from you. And again, if you're struggling or wrestling with this, or if this is causing you anything, any thoughts or anything, please reach out to me. Do not hesitate. And I'd love to get you in touch with some people who can get you the help that I think that you need. So before the break, we were talking about suicide, and we threw out some statistics. We found that, a lot of people are actually turning to suicide. It's the number two cause of death for people between 10 and 34 years old. And even so, from 35 into the mid 50s, it's the number four cause of death in this country. And we talked about perhaps that we chalk it up to mental illness, because we're always chasing after that why question. We want to know why people commit suicide. We want to know what's going on in their minds and in their heads. And in pursuit of that, we try to offer up speculative answers, because we really can't know why. And one of those is related to mental health. But we heard that 54% of the people who commit suicide actually don't have a diagnosed mental health issue. So what's going on here? And I'm not saying that they don't necessarily have it. Maybe it's a misdiagnosis or a non-diagnosis, but there's something more going on there. And I think that the solution is actually found in something more than the circumstances of one's life, whether it be a mental health issue or whether it be their life circumstances, financial ruin, relational issues, a substance abuse. There's something more. And I think it's found in the idea that we as human beings are special. There's a meaning to our lives, a purpose. And oftentimes it's when this meaning, this purpose is stripped from someone that they lose hope and ultimately think death is a better alternative than life. And the answers to life's biggest questions will vary depending on which story we live our lives by. And in this story language, if you guys are regular listeners, should be familiar to you. So what do I think, and what's missing from a lot of the research out there is that in order to answer the question, why does someone commit suicide, we need to first answer the question, why am I here? What's my purpose? Because if there's no ultimate meaning, if there's no purpose, then I'm not sure suicide's even a problem. And we're going to get to that in a minute, hopefully. Understanding this issue has to do with the reality that we live in a world of competing stories. What I mean by that is that there are competing worldviews vying to influence our lives, to explain the world around us, but also to explain why we're here in the first place. This is what worldviews do. They answer the most fundamental questions of life. It's where we derive meaning. It's where we get our purpose from, and how we answer the questions, how we answer these questions are going to dramatically influence the decisions we make, big and small. Life questions, even our desire to live or to die. And as Greg says it in the story of reality, We have options when it comes to worldviews, to the stories. There are three basic worldviews and three basic stories that offer answer to these types of questions. Why are we here? Is there meaning and purpose? And the first, Greg says, is Godism. Then he says matterism. And then he says mindism. And I love how he rewords these in his book. But for our discussion, let's just look at two of them, because I think that there's two prevalent ones in the world today. The first has to do with is materialism. It's matterism. You know, some people call this worldview naturalism or physicalism, because this is the view that all that exists in the physical realm is the physical realm, and everything happens by purely naturalistic processes. Excuse me. One famous materialist, he's an atheist, famously said, "The nitrogen of our DNA, the calcium of our teeth, the iron of our blood, the carbon of our apple pies were made in the interiors of collapsing stars. We are made of star stuff." So basically, we're just a random quantification of molecules dancing to our DNA. Meat suits in motion, I've heard it put. We're just a highly evolved animals. And on this view, it's hard to see how anything at all can have meaning, including people. You know, how do we answer the question of meaning and purpose if everything that ever was or will be is just matter in motion? You know, William Provine, who taught at Cornell and who's committed to this story of reality, said very candidly, "No gods, no life after death, no ultimate foundation for ethics, no ultimate meaning in life, and no human free will are deeply connected to the evolutionary perspective." You know, our good friend Richard Dawkins, who we all love, was honest when he made his point in his book, in a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe that we observe is precisely the properties we should expect if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference. And how's that go for giving us purpose in life? You know, I mean, if we're talking to somebody who's struggling with these issues and this is the answer that we're giving them, if we're saying to them, hey, it's just pitiless indifference, you know, we're just a random quantification of molecules randomly bumping into you. Actually, you know what? You can't even decide for yourself because you're determined to kill yourself. How's that going to weigh in with somebody? And how's that sound? Does that sound like it actually reflects reality? You know, materialism tells us that life is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short, according to at least Thomas Hobbes in The Leviathan. We're told that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and you better get busy living, or you better get busy dying, and you get what you deserve, and it's all a matter of how much effort I put in, and it's all up to me to pull myself up by my own bootstraps. Can you begin to understand perhaps why we think maybe some people are committing suicide, why we're seeing the rates climb? Now, I want to be clear here, and I really want to be clear. If you're listening and you're from an opposing worldview, if you hold naturalism, I'm not saying that if you're an atheist or a materialist, your life is meaningless or that you think life is meaningless. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you don't derive purpose from a random quantification of atoms. You know, I'm not saying that you as a materialist can't derive purpose for your own life. What I'm saying, though, is I don't think the worldview that you hold can shoulder the burden of objective meaning and purpose. Those things have to be borrowed from Godism, as Greg says, from theism of some flavor. Instead, materialism leaves the individual to make up his or her own purpose and meaning. Well, this might sound lovely at first. I think it sounds fantastic because when I was little, I used to say, I'm the boss of my own self. That's what I used to say to my mom. You know, when we strive for that, we have a selfishness in us. We want to be the boss. I want to be the master of my own ship. It sounds fantastic, but it very quickly becomes ugly because no one can derive their own purpose. Because hear me on this. This is really important. If everybody is left to derive their own individual purpose, that means there's no hierarchy of purpose. Who's to say that my purpose isn't more purposeful or more meaningful or more important than your purpose? And then what happens when our purposes and our meanings collide? You know, we'd have a system of Mother Teresa on par with Hitler, you know, and this is the view that happens when humans are just junk, when we're not planned, we're just accident byproducts of nature, you know. I think, and then what happens when we search? How do we derive purpose? You know, we turn to education. We need to educate ourselves more, right? That's what we do. We become smarter because the smarter people will solve the world, you know, or we make more money, or we seek out power, or a strictly evolutionary model, we procreate. That's how we want to propagate our gene into the next generation. So that's what we do: consume and enjoy. That's, I think, where we end up. The only thing that ultimately matters on this view is that you're more powerful than the next guy, or that you can form allegiances with people who are more powerful than the next guy. And then when you fail on this model, this is what I'm thinking of really here, is when you fail, where's your hope? When you come to the realization that you aren't good enough, when you come to the realization that your neighbor's always going to have more money, more power, he's bigger than you, he's stronger than you. Where's your hope? You know, I speak from experience here, because for the majority of my adult life, I was an atheist. And towards the end of that stint, before I came to Christ, before the hound of heaven caught up to me, I was really chasing after this lifestyle. I was pressing into my worldview. And as I became honest with myself, I began to be honest with myself. And in the dark of night, laying in my bed, I remember thinking these thoughts: why am I even here? Because the more I consumed, the more I accomplished, the better I thought I was, I ended in emptiness. I got to where I thought I should be, and then nothing was there. And we see this all the time. I have an article in front of me from the New York Times that's indicating that happiness used to be the goal, but we're finding out that happiness doesn't produce meaning and worth, because we chase after things that ultimately think will make us happy, and in the end they don't. I remember hearing a story of Deion Sanders. After he's winning his first Super Bowl, he has everything he wants, and he says it was the most lonely time of his life in that moment. You know, so we try to derive our hope from human effort at best, more work, more education. But in the end, as far as I can see, it only makes men and women more capable of doing more evil. And then what we say is we need more supervision, so we put more supervision in. But who's supervising the supervisors? And friends, I know these things, like I said, because I've pushed these boundaries. I've lent myself to them. And this is the worldview that I think is most influential today. I think to a certain extent we've seen it creep into even our churches, but we've certainly seen it take the culture. This is why we have songs, and this is a song I used to listen to, and in preparation for this, I looked it up again, and the words say, this is the number one Billboard song in 1999, While I'm Old. Oh boy. But it says, I never thought I'd die alone. I laughed the loudest. Who'd have known? I traced the cord back to the wall. No wonder it was never plugged in at all. I took my time. I hurried up. The choice was mine. I didn't think enough. I'm too depressed to go on. You'll be sorry when I'm gone. And we see whole sitcoms and whole entire television series centered on the idea of suicide. We saw it in 18 Reasons Why, which I watched. 13 Reasons Why. Thanks, Amy. 13 Reasons Why. You know, Matterism and its ambassadors have taken the culture. And I think it's why we are seeing suicide rates climb, you know, which brings us back to our topic and slowly into our conclusion, hopefully. You know, during the last 20 years, we've seen we've seen amazing strides in medical advances. Okay, we're able to treat anxiety, depression. We're able to treat schizophrenia. We're able to diagnose multiple personality disorder, which until recently we couldn't. And we can treat just about everything else better than at any time in history. Today, we have better understanding of how the brain works than we ever have in the course of human history. Yet suicide rates continue to climb. With these advances in science, medicine, and technology, shouldn't we expect, if materialism is true, shouldn't we expect to see them declining? This is why I think so many people aren't able to answer the question why, because I think their worldview doesn't have room for it. It can't bear the burden. But there is a worldview that can answer it. There's a story of reality that can offer transcendent meaning and purpose. And not only this, but it offers hope, even when life's moments are filled with trials. Enter Christianity, or as Greg says, Godism. You know, where materialism gives us answers to questions of meaning and purpose. At its beginning, we heard, you know, in the beginning was were starry stuff. So too do we find the answer to questions of meaning and purpose at the very beginning of our story. Right there in Genesis 1:27, God created man in his own image. The Imago Dei. I love the concept of the Imago Dei. Because being made in God's image, we are special and unique just because of that. It's nothing that we bring to the table. It doesn't matter how short you are or how tall you are. It doesn't matter if you're fat or skinny. I'm really good friends with Nick Vujicic. He's got no arms and legs. But he is equally valuable in the economy of God. It's unbelievable because he's made in the image of God. And with that image comes a sacredness. We're of infinite value and worth. We have innate value that's built into us. The Bible tells us that we're God's handiwork. We're his craftsmanship, Ephesians 2:10. We're beautifully and wonderfully and fearfully made. The Bible tells us that we're knit together in our mother's womb, that he's numbered the hairs on our heads. Well, I'm bald, so I don't know where that gets me. But the Bible says that he calls us by name. The Psalms tell us that he goes with us no matter where we go, whether we lie or sit, whether we go to the heights or to the depths, God is with us. He never forsakes us. He never abandons us. And get this, friends. The Bible tells us there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. Nothing. Neither heights nor depths. Nothing. That's amazing. And because our story has room for an infinite God who's all-knowing and who's never changing, he's immutable, we can trust the promises that he's made. We can trust that we're beautiful. Nothing to do with us, everything to do with God. And this is, I think, something that everybody knows, I think, regardless of the worldview. I think that everybody knows this. Everybody knows that human beings have value and worth. That's why we know it's wrong when the Nazis kill Jews. You know, I was in Auschwitz 2 or 3 years ago. Oh gosh, it's probably 4 years ago now. And I remember standing in front of a vat of 10,000 pounds of women's hair. I remember seeing the confiscated prosthetic limbs. I remember seeing the toys of the children that they took before they ushered these people into the gas chambers and murdered them to the tune of 12,000 a day. I remember standing in the gas chamber and I remember seeing the crematorium. I remember going down into that and feeling a weight, knowing what had happened. There was a great evil, a great wrong. And the only reason why I knew that, I think, is because human beings are valuable. We're worthy of life, not just because we say so, but because the creator and sustainer of the universe says so. This is why we know what happened in the killing fields of Cambodia should never be repeated. This is how we know murder is wrong, even self-murder. You see, and this points to a larger problem, which I think in an upcoming episode, Greg's going to talk about the problem of evil, but just the very fact that we know suicide is sad, that suicide is wrong, I think points to our story. It lends to it authentication. I think that we have the true story of reality. I think we can undergird that with our apologetic. We know that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. We know that there's a moral realism out there. We have this, that we have been armed and equipped. But how are we allowing that armor, that equipping to influence every area of our life the way that we think? You know, the Christian worldview starts with the God of the universe, the creator and sustainer of all, and he gives to us intrinsic value. Every human being made in the image of God. And I think that's the answer to the problems that we have, because I think the major worldview of the day is giving people a false idea about God and a false idea about themselves. And I'm not saying, and we're going to come up on a break right in a couple minutes, but or a minute or two. And let me just conclude with this. I'm not saying that Christians don't struggle. They clearly do. I'm not saying that if you're a Christian, you commit suicide, you don't lose your salvation. That's not what I think. I'm saying that that with the proper perspective, I think we can apply that to the tough times of our lives, put that in the context of a community where we get to tell each other these truths. I think we can wrestle together and overcome these things. So that's just a piece of my mind, guys, on this important issue. And I hope somebody out there benefited from it. And we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to be right back with you. I'm John Noyes. This is Stand to Reason.
Did you know Stand to Reason has a YouTube channel? We release a new video each Monday on the topics you care about. Through short, engaging videos, our speakers train you on tactics, offer apologetics tips, answer common theology questions, and address big issues in the world today. Join tens of thousands of other subscribers so you can stay up to date when we release a new video. Just go to youtube.com and search STR Videos, all one word, and hit the subscribe button. That's STR Videos. Take advantage of this free resource to help you stay informed, encouraged, and equipped as you share your worldview with others.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible, and relevant content each week? As a nonprofit ministry, we rely on generous supporters in order to provide the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including apps, blog posts, articles, or short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. When you visit str.org/donate, you'll find a newly renovated transaction page that makes it easier than ever to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources over the past 25 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Please help us to continue on into the next 25 years by making a gift today at str.org/donate.
Hey guys, John Noyes, Stand to Reason. I'm filling in for Gregory Kokel, and nobody calls him Gregory. I used to pastor at Greg's church, and we used to give away his book, The Story of Reality, which if you don't own, you really should. It's phenomenal, and we used to give it away to new guests, Living Oaks Church. And every time I used to say, oh, there's, you know, if you're a new guest, go get your free copy of The Story of Reality by Gregory Kokel. And he always used to correct me. So Greg Kokel, I'm filling in for him. I'm definitely not him, but I am overjoyed and excited and super nervous to be sitting in this seat. And it's a true privilege to be able to be filling in for him. We've been talking about suicide, and we kind of just wrapped up our talk. And if you guys have any questions for me, please make sure that you email me, jon@str.com. And I'm going to take your calls, .org. Woo! You should see it, guys. Outside this window, Brooke and Amy were like jumping up and down. They were going crazy. I'm just kidding. They weren't. But anyways, let's start taking some calls here. And if you have a question for me, please call in right now. We're live. So it's we're live 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays. I should say that. 855-243-9975. International would be 1-562-424-8229. And also, don't forget that you can always tweet your questions to #STRAsk, #STRAsk. I just turned 80 right in front of your eyes. Yeah, I don't do Twitter all that often, but you can definitely turn there, and then that'll get to STR Ask, which is our shorter podcast, where Amy Hall gets to answer your questions, and we all know that she knows everything, so you want to make sure that you get your question to her, and you can find a new show every Monday and Thursday on iTunes, so it's the STR app. You can download us on iTunes or the Android platform. Yeah, Android Play or Google Play Store. And make sure you stop by our website too, str.com for the blogs and .org for the blogs. You'll never let me do this again. And no, we're just having fun here. And now let's get to your call. And I'm going to go to hey, Paul, are you with me?
I am. Let me take the speaker.
Paul, man, are you from Massachusetts?
I I am, and I thought I just heard you say something, and you had a little New England twang going on there.
Yeah, I try to suppress it because these Californians won't know what I'm saying. Where in Massachusetts are you from, Paul?
Well, a little town called Hubbardston, but it's just north of Worcester, which is right smack in the middle of Massachusetts.
So my mom lives in Worcester. Well, actually, you know what? She just moved to the South Shore, but she's Worcester. My brother's in Auburn.
Oh, I used to live in Auburn.
Yeah,
cool.
Beautiful town, man.
Nice, nice. And hey, by the way, congratulations. New kid on the block, huh?
Yeah, until Greg listens to this.
I don't know. I think you're doing a pretty good job, Phil.
Oh, thank you for your kindness. And hey, you know what? Thank you for holding on for like 45 minutes. Actually, it's probably more than that because
okay.
I think you called like 10 minutes before we started.
Yeah, I did. I really wanted to get into the queue, you know, so I wanted to, you know, get
awesome.
Ahead of everybody else.
So what do you got for us today?
Yeah, so I just think about stuff, and, you know, this one's been bugging me for a while, and I've been wanting to call in. So, you know, in, like, theology, you know, we know about the Trinity, you know, God, Son, Holy Spirit, right? And, you know, obviously God became man, Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when Jesus is a man with, like, a physical location in
That's right.
space, you know, and then he also bodily resurrected, so I'm assuming he kind of seems like he should still have a physical location in space, but yet God, who's immutable, is omnipresent, and I'm like trying to, like, how do I make sense of that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. So I'm just going to kind of repeat it back to you in different terms, just to make sure I'm understanding right. So because God is immutable, he doesn't change. One of the mm-hmm. attributes of God is that he doesn't exist in space, or he exists everywhere. And
right.
So how is it that Jesus is God?
Well, how is Jesus bodily? In other words, he has a location. I would think that if he's bodily, he has a location.
That's right. Yeah. I think actually, like, part of the answer to the question, and I'm just going to try to talk this out with you. I think part
sure.
of the answer to your question is in your question. So the Bible teaches us that Jesus is both God and man at the same time. But we got to remember that Jesus, when he becomes Jesus, when he goes from the second person of the Trinity,
he's just adding it. He's not okay.
Yeah. So he's taking on humanity. He's taking on manhood,
gotcha.
You know, humanity,
right.
And by definition, excuse me, and because he takes on, because he's fully human, he's fully man and fully God, but by definition, he can only be in one place at one time in order to be human, if that makes sense.
Correct, yes. Yep.
And there, as far as I know, there's no instance of a human being omnipresent. That'd be kind of weird. Spreading mm-hmm. your physical self over everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
beat me up, Scotty, kind of stuff.
Yeah. So as a man, and he's a man right now, right? He's just located mm-hmm. in one place right now because of the ascension. He's in the heavens,
right.
But also because he's divine, and he possessed omnipresence before he came man. So we can say that. So let me see if I can make this into a sentence for you. Okay, so Jesus, as a man, is located in one place, the heavens. But since he has a divine nature, and one of the attributes of divinity is omnipresence, then we can say that Jesus is omnipresent. But it gets kind of complicated there. So before he was a man, he was omnipresent. Then he took on humanity, mm-hmm. and because he took on that nature, he has a physical location. If that makes sense.
So is that simultaneous now?
Simultaneous. Right now, Jesus has a physical location.
Okay, so he's is or is not omnipresent now?
So this is a good one. I need to think about this. There's a thing called the communication of a properties of properties, and I haven't thought about it in a really long time. So I think it's the teaching that In the one person of Christ, there are two natures, and
right.
that each of the two natures has attributes. And so Jesus technically has, I think he technically has the attribute of omnipresence, but that attribute is suppressed because he's still in human form. It's kind of like the way I relate it, and I think I'm correct. I hope I am. when he was, you know, he's omniscience. Jesus didn't appeal to his omniscience.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. Of it.
I should probably say I don't know to this one. I'm talking myself into a circle.
Oh no, you're first caller, and I stumped you.
No, you're good, dude. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You know, I read for these types of questions, I read Tozer, because I think Tozer does a wonderful job on the attributes of God.
Oh, good, and, because I actually just bought that book. I'm waiting for it to arrive like this week.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh, it's a fantastic book. You're gonna love it. I read Knowledge of the Holy at least once a year. It's just so good. So, yeah, I hope I made it a little bit more clear for you, but it sounds like a little bit.
Yeah, like, I'm definitely going to, you know, dive into Tozer and see what he has to say and all that. But, yeah, all right. Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm definitely going to be calling back because I got lots of questions. So,
Me too, man. You know, sometimes people think that because we're on the podcast or because, like, we work at Stand the Reason, we have all the answers. I wish that was the case.
We can't know it all. Otherwise, we'd be God, right?
So. Yeah, you know what? Like, I think about this stuff all the time, you know, and I wish, you know what I wish? I hope that when we get to heaven, there's like, you know, a DVR, like, so I can, like, rewind events and I can see, like, you know, the creation ex nihilo. Like, how exactly did God speak everything into existence? Mm-hmm. Like, when he doesn't speak, right? Like, or I'm hoping that there was, like, a womb cam where we can witness the Immaculate Conception. Like, how exactly did the Holy Spirit interact with Mary? You know, it's...
womb cam. Okay.
Yeah, it's these things that keep me up at night. But Paul, I really appreciate your call, and thanks for listening to us.
Yeah, hey, well, thank you so much, and just... glad to have you on board, and looking forward to hearing from you some more. And hopefully, you guys can get some stuff going out here in the great Northeast.
You know what? Like, I would absolutely love an excuse to go home and go back east and visit. And if you know any churches that are sold out on apologetics, you've got to have them reach out to us here at Stand to Reason, because we would love to try to get a rethink conference maybe in the Northeast.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, because you really don't have anything up this way, and I'm thinking of Boston, New York, I mean, Philadelphia, huge market up here. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I'll think about that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome, Paul. Hey,
anyways, John, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. God bless, and say hi to everybody. They would stand to reason for me.
Thanks very much, Paul. I'll talk to you next time, man. It's so good to hear from people from the East Coast, and I just love. It reminds me of home, especially this time on the East Coast. This is the best time of year to be there because the leaves are going to start changing if they haven't already, and the air gets cool at night. There's a cool crisp in the air. It's the smell of everything changes, and life in general just is awesome. September, October, if you guys are planning a trip, September and October, the Northeast is the time to go. And it's a great time to visit. The Northeast, and we have an open set here. So if you guys want to give me a call, I would love to hear from you at 855-243-9975, and I could field your questions and try to do a good job in answering you. And if you're international, you can call me at 562-424-8229. Before this call, we talked about suicide, and there's a few closing notes. Like I can use. The last couple minutes. Do we end right at 5:57? Okay, awesome. So I'm going to take the next like 25 minutes to talk about. I'm just joking. I'm going to take the next few minutes because there's a question about especially in recent events of this pastor, this young pastor who took his own life, and out by me, there was another pastor maybe late last year who took his own life. And the idea is can a Christian commit suicide and still go to heaven? And I think it's probably the question that I get asked the most. It's probably the question, to be honest with you, I wrestle with the most or wrestled with the most at the onset of this. You know, can a Christian commit suicide and still go to heaven? And I think it really stems from the fact, this question stems from the fact that some major religious organizations have taught over the years that Christians who commit suicide, they can't go to heaven. because they no longer have the opportunity to repent for their sins. And I think that this speaks to the nature of our salvation. And this question, actually, when I was wrestling with it, brought up a scene from a movie I watched. It's about Martin Luther. I think the movie's name is Luther. It's with Fiennes. His last name is Fiennes. And there's a really powerful scene. And I know that this is just a movie, so I'm not relying it on it for its historical accuracy, whether or not this event really happened. But I think actually something similar at least happened, because I think Luther took a hard stance on this. And there's a scene where this boy is found hanging from some scaffolding, and the parents are freaking out because they think that suicide means that he isn't going to be in heaven. And so they're heartbroken, as you and I would surely be if that was the case with our kids. And Martin Luther said, get him down. He helps getting him down. And then he goes to bury him in the church cemetery, and everybody around him is saying, no, you can't bury the suicide. The person who died by suicide can't rest. If you like here, you can't do it. He's anathema. You got to bury him out back. And Luther doesn't go for that. And he pushes back at them. And I think that there's something for us to learn from here. I know it's a movie, but it speaks to the nature of our salvation. Does our salvation have anything to do with us? No. It has nothing to do with our good works or our bad works. And also, is there anybody here who doesn't have a moment of weakness, who doesn't sin? I know for me, I've sinned plenty today, probably, unconsciously, consciously. But God is quick to forgive. And remember the verse I quoted earlier, right? There's nothing that can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. So then that nothing, literally, I mean, it's nothing. Nothing can separate us. Like when you are in the fold of God, there's nothing that can tear, not even suicide. You see, once we've accepted Christ and have been guaranteed eternal life, nothing can separate us from that. That's Romans 8:38, by the way. There's nothing. And I just like to kind of wrap up the last minute and a half here with this idea that suicide's a serious sin. Yeah, it's murder. It is. It's murder in the eyes of God. You're taking the life of an innocent human being. But even though it's self-murder, because of the grace of God and the sacrifice of Christ on the cross for all of our sins, even the most grievous sin any of us can imagine is completely and totally forgiven. And that's a fundamental fact of the Christian worldview. And from that, we derive all the hope in the world. So, hey guys, that was our podcast today. I'm John, sitting in for Greg Kokel. This is Stand to Reason. And it's just been an honor to be with you. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.